Welcome to the Anesthesiology Journal podcast, an audio interview of study authors and editorialists.
Hello, I'm Jim Rathmill, professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School and one of the executive editors of Anesthesiology. You're listening to an anesthesiology podcast that we've designed for physicians and scientists interested in the research that appears in the journal. Today, we're going to talk about the development of inhaled nitric oxide for the treatment of pulmonary hypertension. I'm here today with Dr. Warren Zapol. Dr. Zapol is emeritus anesthetist-in-chief and Reginald Jenny Professor of Anesthesia at Harvard Medical School, and he's director of the Anesthesia Center for Critical Care Research at Massachusetts General Hospital. We're together today in Dr. Zapol's laboratory at Massachusetts General Hospital, and it was in his laboratories that his team performed the experiments that created a viable means to deliver nitric oxide for the treatment of pulmonary hypertension. Dr. Zapol has written an article that will appear early in 2019 in one of the issues of anesthesiology. It's one of our classic paper revisited series in which an investigator tells the story behind a pivotal scientific discovery and its original publication. The title of his paper is The Nitric Oxide Story, August 6, 2018. Dr. Zapol, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for asking me.
First, I want to give listeners a couple of disclosures. Dr. Zapol is an inventor on patents filed by Massachusetts General Hospital on the electric generation of nitric oxide, and he's on the scientific advisory board of Third Pole Incorporated, which has licensed patents on nitric oxide generators from Massachusetts General Hospital. We'll talk more about where you're going with your work and where it's led in just a few minutes. Dr. Zapol, congratulations on the publication of this reflection on your scientific work, a recognition of your scientific accomplishments and their direct contribution to the field of medicine. The classic paper you revisit was published in Lancet in 1992 and was titled Inhaled Nitric Oxide in Persistent Pulmonary Hypertension of the Newborn. You reported the effects of inhaling up to 80 parts per million by volume of nitric oxide at an inspired oxygen concentration of 90% for up to 30 minutes by 6 infants with persistent pulmonary hypertension of the newborn. You showed the results on systemic oxygenation and blood pressure. Let's go through the story of how you took what was considered to be a poisonous gas and a pollutant to being a life-saving treatment for blue babies. Tell us about how you first got started in research.
Oh, in research?
Research, yeah.
I was at NIH. I started to do research on ECMO, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, there with a brilliant man, Ted Colabo. And he was a great teacher, a wonderful mentor, a kind, gentle man who had built membrane oxygenators, and I tested them. I think I did the first testing in babies in Puerto Rico on premature babies. And about 1990, when I started nitric oxide, they were doing 1,800 ECMOs a year in babies. So pediatricians never liked ECMO because you had to heparinize to use an extracorporeal membrane oxygenator machine, and many of the babies bled into their head. They were hypoxic. Like 15% were bleeding into their head. So people were looking for another therapy for pulmonary hypertension and being able to dilate the lung. So UCLA was trying to recruit me at the time as professor of anesthesia and chair, and I would go to UCLA, and two things happened there. One is one of the people who was trying to recruit me was called Lou Ignaro. And he gets the Nobel Prize for discovering nitric oxide in 1998. So Lou is trying to convince me to study nitric oxide. It might work. It might be useful. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I could breathe it. And Lou says, no, no, don't breathe it. You'll destroy the organ. You'll kill the lung. It's a poison gas. It will cause lung damage. So I was flying home, and I opened the LA Times. This is about 88. And I opened the LA Times, and there next to the weather report was the gas that people breathed in Los Angeles, and there was the carbon monoxide level and the sulfur dioxide level, and then there was the nitrogen dioxide level. And I said, oh, nothing makes nitrogen dioxide. Everything makes nitric oxide. I'll bet they breathe nitric oxide if they walk through a tunnel or behind a bus. And I went home and I called the Environmental Protection Agency in North Carolina. And I said, can you breathe NO? And they said, sure. Look at the limits. It's 25 parts per million. You can breathe for 8 hours a day. If you work at McDonald's and you have a gas flame, you're probably getting that. But up to 25 is quite safe. So I had an idea that nitric oxide might be safe at low levels when breathed. And the first thing I did was test it in sheep. Now, why was I testing inhaled nitric oxide? Because I had tested many drugs, nitroglycerin, nitroprusside, as a decreaser of the pulmonary artery pressure in ARDS and in various other diseases. And they worked. It worked. However, intravenously, it also dropped the blood pressure. And I was very interested in what would happen with sheep. So I tried sheep, awake sheep with a tracheostomy and a blood pressure catheter and a PA catheter. And sure enough, breathing nitric oxide in small quantities lowered the PA pressure, didn't change the systemic blood pressure. I could use up to 80 parts per million. And the sheep were perfectly happy and had a normal blood pressure. And I said, wow, because people had tried this in babies with various other vasodilator drugs, and the babies died. So because it dropped the blood pressure, but no one had tried inhaling the gas nitric oxide. So there we went. We did our sheep. We were very pleased with our sheep experiments here. And that gave me confidence that we could try a baby. I had a very bright young man who had been chief resident here, who was a pediatric anesthetist and a neonatologist. And he said, let's try it. Maybe it would work in blue babies, babies with pulmonary hypertension and PO2s in the 30s and blood pressures in the 30s. So let's see if it works like it works in the sheep. And sure enough, we gave our first baby about 89, 90, and we did three babies. And by the third baby, we kind of knew what we were doing, and the baby turned pink. I'll never forget, the nurse asked me, what did you do? Because the pink change happened within 60 seconds of turning on 25, 50 parts per million of nitric oxide. And I said, well, I gave the baby a small amount of poison gas. And she looked at me and I looked at her, and the parents had given permission and the IRB had said, let Zapol go. He hasn't killed anybody yet. And so off we went. Jay Roberts, our anesthetist and neonatologist, anesthesiologist, and I studied 10 babies, and that's the paper that we published, I think it was The Lancet, a long time ago. And then as soon as other people saw that, one, they asked, why does it work? And it works because when you breathe NO, it binds instantly to blood hemoglobin as it goes through the lung, which destroys its vasodilator properties. So it has none when you breathe it. And it's because hemoglobin and the creator put methemoglobin reductase in your red cells. Maybe she knew we were going to breathe NO. I don't know. But anyway, it worked. And the methemoglobins never went above 2.5% or something like that. We did it for 30 minutes. And then pretty soon, we realized that you could leave the baby on the gas. And eventually, the IRB said, okay, Zapol, leave him on longer. Don't turn it off. We don't want to do ECMO on him. And so the average is 5 days. And now about 20,000, 30,000 babies a year breathe nitric oxide, and it luckily seems to work, save some lives. It's useful, and no one in these 30 years has found significant toxicity. If you don't use too much, you won't get mini hemoglobinemia, you don't cause lung disease, and in 4 or 5 days, you can wean it off, turn it off, and the baby stays pink and dilated. So we saw effects on oxygenation in these babies, no effects on blood pressure, and we knew we were dilating their lungs. So we were very lucky.
So the average duration of therapy is just 5 days. What is it that makes it such a potent pulmonary vasodilator in these children with persistent pulmonary hypertension of the newborn in the first days of treatment, but yet allows it to be weaned an average of just 5 days later?
Great question. I don't think we truly know in people, because we can't know about people by grinding them up. That's against the law. But you can take a mouse a couple of days before it's supposed to be born. You can get a mouse fetus and check. And there is no effective nitric oxide synthase in the lung. On the day that you're supposed to be born, if you're a mouse, there is nitric oxide synthase. So when you take that first breath, and you've been on a placenta, your mother's been giving you the oxygen in utero, and you haven't been breathing much, you make respiratory motions. But as soon as you pop out, take that deep breath, you got to dilate the pulmonary circulation and make nitric oxide. And my guess is, like the mouse, some people's clock when they're born isn't quite ready to make nitric oxide synthase. If you give them this natural human gas in small quantities, you might start at 40 or 80, but then you'd wean down to 5. And after 5 days, you can wean it off, and they stay pink and dilated. I think, nobody knows, that nitric oxide synthase comes up in those 5 days of you breathing. I think, but we do wean them on average at 5 days.
Can you talk a little bit about how the use of inhaled nitric oxide has expanded in the early days after it was first used to treat persistent pulmonary hypertension in the newborn? For instance, how has its use expanded into treatment of adults, and how is it used most commonly today?
Yeah, great question. It's used probably 85% of NO's usage, which I think is quite significant. Might be 100,000 a year is used a lot in cardiac surgery because they can deal with a $14,000 price per set of cylinders, or $350 an hour, whatever they're charging for it. I think it's used mainly in pulmonary hypertension of various causes. It's used a lot in pediatric surgery for babies before and after surgery with pulmonary hypertension. And it's used a lot in adults with pulmonary hypertension before and after lung transplants. And it works. We recently built a box for adults and an NO generating device. And we were able to show about 25-30% of them, even though they're on other drugs for pulmonary hypertension, respond to inhaled nitric oxide. So we're happy. I mean, it is used a lot for that by cardiac surgeons. And when you ask them to randomize, they don't want to. Not air for my patient. Give them the nitric oxide, please.
Well, the cardiac surgeons are going to make that a tough one to test using randomized controlled trials. Well, I know you have always been an inventor, and your mind just never stops working. Nitric oxide is distributed in large gas cylinders, and they're very expensive, and they require specialized equipment to deliver the nitric oxide at these very small quantities. So in recent years, your team's developed a simple way of generating nitric oxide from room air. Can you describe how this works and where you see this new device fitting into the patient treatment armamentarium?
Right. Well, this idea came from NASA, which was flying airplanes through lightning bolts and measured a lot of nitric oxide in the air. And I said, gee, I'm a radio amateur. Since I was 12, I was making sparks. I tried not to kill myself, but I made a lot of sparks. And I said, gee, we don't need lightning to make the spark. We could make the spark. And when you breathe in, trigger it, or just make it continuously, we just need a spark plug. And we had to figure out what metals to make it out of. We need a spark plug, a power source, could be a battery. It takes very little power to do this and make enough for an adult. So we started to make such devices really in the 90s as we were doing this. And then I was too busy as chief to pay attention to it. But in 2008, when I got some time, no longer being chief, I could sit down with colleagues, build nice devices, test them in humans. And I think the main reason was it was nitric oxide sold in cylinders at 600 or 800 parts per million, and nitrogen so expensive, $14,000 a baby. There is none in China, none in Africa, very little in South America. And I thought, gee, you could really make it for pennies or dollars. And I convinced my son to be CEO of the little company that we build called Pole 3, North Pole, South Pole, Zay Pole, you know. So we started a company, and we're hopeful that certain companies will invest in us and allow us to build a box, certainly a baby box for babies all over the world who don't have any, and they are blue. So off we go.
Fantastic. I do have one more question. Do you have any advice for young scientists as they face challenges similar to the challenges you faced in your early work with nitric oxide?
I have two thoughts. One is study with a really good mentor, and don't be afraid to work with other people. So work with your colleagues and study with Jim Rathmel, a really good mentor, and work on great ideas. So be brave, and it may take a while to figure it out. And I'm head of the animal biocook here at MGH. So you have to use animals to see if the stuff works and is not toxic, whether it be a drug or an inhaled gas. So you have to do animal experiments and be patient. Be patient. I think it's very, very important to be patient, take your time, study with a good mentor, do your first publications with a mentor so you know how to publish well, and then be brave. Go to NIH and, you know, it's competitive. Go back again and again and again. So those are my thoughts for young investigators.
Stick with it and don't get discouraged.
Exactly.
I hope today's discussion will lead many of you listening to read this special article about Dr. Zapol's classic paper on treating persistent pulmonary hypertension in the newborn using nitric oxide and the development of inhaled nitric oxide as a life-saving treatment. It appears in one of the early issues in 2019 in Anesthesiology. Dr. Zapol, thanks for allowing me to visit your lab today and for the wonderful discussion about the development of inhaled nitric oxide. And thank you for your mentorship in all of my years as an attending here at MGH, and for telling me that there is life after being a chair.
Jim, you're really welcome, and thank you for hearing the story.
You've been listening to the Anesthesiology Journal Podcast, the official peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Check anesthesiology.org for an archive of this podcast and other related content.